So, welcome. This is the one session in the afternoon, and the title is Benefiting Those Beyond Our Borders, Service Learning. Represented in this session is the work of faculty and students from across the university, including the schools of architecture, medicine, nursing, engineering, education, and the College of Arts and Sciences. Our panelists are a model of disciplines working together in ways that can improve teaching and learning, service, and global citizenship. There are going to be four presentations. The first one is assessing outcomes for transformative learning and citizenship in an international educational setting. The participants are Lauren Intolibi-Camille, Carol Spreen, and Bob Swap. The second one will be Innovative Service Learning Curriculum Promotes Community Engagement in an Ethic of Service in First Year Medical Students, and our presenter there is Mohan Nadkarni. Initiative Recover is the third presentation. Advanced Architectural Design Studio and Research Seminar, and that's Anselmo Canfora. And the fourth presentation is Water and Health in Limpopo Province, a model for global research, education, and service. That's Joy Boissevain, Nisha Bachwi, Karen Firehawk, Rebecca Dillingham, Jared Learmonth, Garrick Lewis, Janita Richardson, James Smith, and Anita Thompson-Heisterman. Presenters, here are the rules. Each of you, or as a group or as one, will have 10 to 12 minutes for your formal presentation. And after all four presentations, the floor will be open for questions. This means that all four presentations should be finished within about 12 minutes. Which will allow then for 20 minutes for questions and discussion at the end. And I'll hold up a card to let you know when your time is just about up. So I'm a mean presider here. So when that presentation finishes, if you'll sit down and the next group comes up, we'll just try to keep it running and try to keep it going on time. Now let's get started. And Lauren, Carol and Bob, or all of you, or whichever one is presenting, please come forward. Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Lauren Intolibi-Camille. I'm just finishing up my doctoral studies at the Curry School of Education here, and I'm presenting on behalf of a team of folks, Bob Swap from the Department of Environmental Science, Carol Ann Spreen, who's my advisor and colleague at the Curry School of Education, but also with our colleagues from Southern Illinois University, the University of Benda in Limpopo Province of South Africa, the University of Botswana, and the University Eduardo Mondlane in Maputo, Mozambique. We're going to talk today about the findings from my dissertation study that have also been part of an evaluation that I conducted on the study abroad component of a consortium I'll be telling you a little bit more about. So the purpose of the study was framed through three major intersecting interests: the internationalization of higher education, transformative learning theory, and the development of civic identity. I came to these three constructs after about 6 or 7 years here at the University of Virginia prior to my becoming a graduate student and working on community university partnerships. So my enduring interest has been, what is the effect of programming that is centered on academic community engagement on the construction of civic identity and the transformative learning of all of the participants involved? And that includes undergraduate students, graduate students, as well as faculty and community partners. These were all considered through two enduring questions, those of the purpose of education and education for citizenship. These came from the overarching questions that you see above, and to understand the experience of participants within an international education setting and how their perspectives are linked to transformation and civic identity development. The coursework that I looked at is part of a larger international education consortium, which is known as ESAVANA, which stands for Eastern Southern Africa Virginia Networks and Associations, which is an evolving and expanding international consortium that's been in operation for over a decade. the guiding principles for the East Savannah Consortium, which overarch all of its coursework and all the community-based projects, are relationship, respect, and reciprocity. So those three principles were the guiding frameworks through which I tried to better understand participant perspectives. The foundational coursework includes a January term course, which is entitled Ethics, Practices, and Protocols of International Research, which to date has included more than 100 U.S. students and over 40 Southern African colleagues, and People, Culture, and the Environment of Southern Africa, which is a four-week study abroad program that travels through South Africa and Mozambique, and to date has included over 114 U.S. students and 32 international students. The participants in the study also included students who were engaged in many different kinds of international and local community-based research projects. This gives you a little visual example of our partnerships. The five primary institutional partners are from Southern Illinois University, the University of Virginia, the University of Botswana, the University of Eduardo Mondlane in Maputo, Mozambique, and the University of Venda in South Africa. This was a qualitative study. I used narrative inquiry to better understand the ways in which participants experience their coursework and their community-based projects and their partnerships within the East Savannah Consortium. The methods included document collection and analysis from the University of Virginia primarily, a series of interviews which included in-person interviews, Skype interviews, and electronic interviews, illustrative documents that the participants themselves submitted that they deemed to be most representative of their experiences within the East Savannah Consortium coursework and community-based research projects, and a modified survey instrument for the undergraduate participants in my dissertation study who were not part of the 2009 evaluation that I conducted. I also tried to come up with the language of the courses themselves through course documents such as syllabi, course descriptions, and articles that have been written by various participants who have gone through the courses. And I also conducted a 2009 formative evaluation on the 2009 study abroad program. I was a participant observer and evaluator for that. I traveled with the study abroad program for the entire 4 weeks that it traveled. And it was also my first time going to Southern Africa, so there were lots of ways in which I learned about that experience along with the undergraduate participants. That evaluation included pre and post surveys, in region and post-travel interviews. So the post-travel interviews were full 6 months after travel, so we were really able to try to comprehend what meaning the undergraduate participants in particular were making from their study abroad experience, how it was relating to their subsequent coursework and any other activities that they were engaging in. And then the qualitative coding of reflection paper assignments, pre-departure and post-departure, or coming back from travel, and then the field notes that I collected during travel. This gives you a little snapshot of the participants in our study. There were four undergraduate UVA participants, one undergraduate participant from Southern Illinois University, one participant who had started as an undergraduate at University of Botswana in 2004 and is now a faculty member at University of Botswana, and then faculty from the University of Eduardo Mondlane, UNIVEN in South Africa, and Southern Illinois University. So the findings were broken up into three major areas. The first was in terms of the institutional goals and mission. Now, my dissertation study did not focus on the institution itself, and the primary institution that I looked at was UVA as the flagship institution for the East Savannah Consortium. But what I did look at is the ways in which the university responds to particular mandates. So reactivity and response, and in this case, it was the ways in which the rhetoric of the institution responds to competition with peer institutions, but also the kind of rhetoric that's happening in higher education right now, and global citizenship would be a really good example of that. There's also an increase at our own university and other universities on academic community engagement initiatives. Many higher education institutions, including the University of Virginia, are investing a great deal of resources in terms of monetary resources and faculty resources and undergraduate resources into academic community initiatives. So I was very interested in looking at how that was playing out in the discourse here at the University of Virginia. I was also looking at the tension with regard to the value of academic community engagement, which could be a whole nother dissertation. I also looked at the language of the Senate Consortium, which was a pseudonym for East Savannah. in my dissertation work. I looked at course documents which showed a great deal of attention to cross-cultural exchanges, experiences, experiential learning, and engaged scholarship. I also had access to testimonials, which talked about students who had already gone all the way through East Savannah, many of them had graduated on, who were keeping in touch with the faculty here at the University of Virginia or at SIU, UEM, or Univen, who were able to speak a little bit to the distal outcomes. How had this experience while they were undergraduates affected the kinds of jobs they were doing now or the graduate schools that they were attending? And so I had a really nice, almost longitudinal snapshot of how they were making sense of that. And then from institutional partners, the idea of constructivist teaching, learning, and research, and ongoing contribution to pedagogy and practice. From the participants, which were primarily the undergraduate students in this case, I looked at motivations and pathways for involvement. Why did they want to take this kind of coursework in the first place, and how did their expectations match up with their experiences? I looked at the ways in which they talked about change or influence of the coursework, so that was my construct for transformation. And then I also looked at the ways in which they talked about things like connection to social responsibility for the different places that they had experienced in these international education settings. This led to the construction of what I call the East Savannah Consortium Model for Teaching, Learning, and Research. This is a constructivist model where teaching, learning, and research are equally considered in terms of the ways in which each informs the other. On the horizontal axis is the transactional to transformational. So students, in particular undergraduate students, could fall anywhere on that continuum. For some, it was more transactional in that they weren't really changing their pathway very much, but the ways in which they thought about going about their work had changed. Then on the other end of the continuum is transformational, where there were undergraduate participants who completely changed their majors, changed the number of courses they were taking that had to do with global development, for instance, or were planning on going somewhere in an international education setting as a result of these experiences. Then there was also motivation on the one hand, which shifted from extrinsic to intrinsic. So at first they were doing it because they needed the credits or because it fit in with their schedule. And then they were taking more courses like that because it became part of their educational experiences in a more intentional endeavor. And then with action, I was able, as I said, to look a little bit more at the proximal effects and in some cases the distal effects. So I'm running out of time, so these are just some snapshots of the kinds of things that participants were saying that fell under constructivist teaching, learning, and research, constructing transformation, or what I found through the research that I did was this dimension of transformation, which is known as restoration, and that is where you have dissonant experiences that are well scaffolded and well networked so that you have kind of a safety net to go back to, and dissonance doesn't become frustrational. As far as citizenship is concerned, one of the biggest findings that we found is the level of kinship that our participants have developed with people who they felt to be very different from them beforehand that has carried over for many years after travel, in particular from the study abroad program, but also from the J term. And then social responsibility. This social responsibility came up again and again in terms of how people felt about the different communities that they now believed they were part of as well, but also in terms of really trying to mediate misinformation about particular communities. This is the network that came out of my dissertation work. You'll notice that Nikon and Maria, who are two institutional partners, have been involved with this with the East Savannah Consortium since 2004, and they continue to refer students and to participate in the study abroad in the January term, as do many of the other participants that are represented in the network. Links and future directions from this work. Transformation is a big part of the work that I do, but also transdisciplinarity, where knowledge, that you find that knowledge resides outside of the boundaries of the institution, which I think is a very important aspect of academic community engagement. Ideas about citizenship that transcend Northern Hemisphere, Southern Hemisphere power differentials. Institutional goals and assessments in terms of trying to understand better what are the learning outcomes from the participants, particularly undergraduate students that we work with, and then ideas about accountability and shifting that construct. For future directions, and actually pretty immediate, we're expanding our own constructs in terms of global competencies, but also I did do another evaluation of the January term 2011, which I'm in the process of conducting right now, and are looking at civic incubator models for the ways in which academic community engagement is organized. So I think I made it under my 12 minutes. Thank you very much. I look forward to questions. I would just like to say quickly, we have many, many partners, and I want to just, you know, put that up there as an acknowledgement of all of the people who are involved in all of the work that we do on a continual basis. Thank you very much.
So thank you very much for having me. I'm Mo Nadkarni. I'm coming from the School of Medicine, and I wanted to highlight also Darcy Lieb, who's helped with our course in social issues in medicine, and Dale Alexander, who's here, who's our course administrator. I'm here today to talk a little bit about our course that was new in 2005 called Social Issues in Medicine, which was really developed as an adjunct and to integrate action in the community and social responsibility in with medical education from the very first day of medical school. So what was the purpose of the course? The course was introduced to design to medical students to the complex socioeconomic and cultural and policy issues that impact the practice of medicine and to promote an ethic of service. So there's a lot of basic science learning that goes on during the first couple of years, but what we've heard from students and ourselves in our own training was that there was not a lot of discussion early on about the social issues that affect us and how we practice medicine each and every day. So our learning goals for the course were to address how social and cultural issues, how gender, how economics and policy impact not only the delivery of medical care and how we do it, but the health of populations that it affects. We wanted to address how we understand humanism and professionalism in medicine, especially in an era where doctors are felt to be more entitled. We wanted to really connect and reinforce this ethic of service and professionalism. We wanted to develop students who would reflect on their practice and increase the comfort level of them in the future in working with people that were different than themselves. And we wanted to develop partnerships between the university and the community, which students could further their ethic of service. So, and I think that partnership you'll see in some of the slides has really developed nicely over the last 5 years. So some of the highlights of the course, and I'll tell you a little bit how we set it up, but there are content talks where information is presented by members of the community in addition to UVA faculty. There are curricular threads that are begun in the very first year that travel through the 4 years of medical training, such as cultural diversity, health policy, and ethics. Those are all introduced in this course in the beginning presentations and then carried through the whole curriculum. We wanted to focus a little bit on exposure to diverse populations, and we're going to be hearing about a lot of international activities here, but even in our own community, we have quite a diversity of populations, and we had lots of examples of students who really hadn't been outside the confines of Charlottesville and went down to southern Elmore County and really had their eyes open in terms of lack of running water, dealing with patients who really hadn't gone to the doctors, who didn't do any dental care, all sorts of things that really was beyond their ken before they started to do these service projects. We also, one of the other highlights is that students initiated some of their own proposals for placements. It wasn't just us sticking them out into the community, but they came up with ideas about where they wanted to go and what they wanted to do. And in doing so, they developed a lot of health-related educational materials for a particular population. So going into Charlottesville High School, going into local elementary schools, and presenting health-related materials. As I've mentioned over and over, the ethic of service was reinforced. And reflection and self-evaluation through both written exercises, case reviews, and discussions to work on achieving some personal growth. So service learning, I don't really have to tell you, but it was a relatively new concept for a medical school course to take on actual service learning, where we have a structured experiential learning activity that actually ties the academic content to service in the community. And it uses self-reflection and it permits learners to make a contribution to the community while they're developing new insights. So there's this balance. So what was the course format? It starts with in-class content talks by community experts and faculty, just to give you a few examples. Poverty and homelessness. We had Alex Galata from the Legal Aid and Justice Center coming in and going over examples of how the issues he works with affect some of the medical outcomes that occur. Healthcare policy, management of chronic illness, mental health issues, LGBTQ issues, and health disparities are also taken on in these content talks. Then the sort of revolutionary part of the medical education was that each of our students was required, 155 students now, to do 30 hours of service learning placement in the community, either with a social service agency at a school or with a medically related program. So it wasn't necessarily, it was a little different than when they get into clerkships where they're providing clinical service. The concept of service learning was actually going out and volunteering in the community and working. And we didn't really mind whether or not it was a health-related activity like volunteering at a free clinic or doing tutoring after school. And then the other parts are deal with how students grow with reflection. Reflection exercises are assigned, and there's small group discussions in the clinical performance development class where people can share ideas. What was the service in service learning? Well, they were often offering concrete sort of material assistance. They were doing administrative tasks, delivering material and resources to clients. There was advocacy with clients, helping clients get access to service. The International Refugee Clinic was one place where people volunteered. Students had their placements, and they actually helped advocate to get some of the newer immigrant services that they hadn't had access to before. Health education, as I mentioned, outreach programs, so diabetes screening in the community, for example, tutoring, listening, offering empathy and support, and especially this concept that is so important for physicians to get comfortable with, which is just being with another patient, another person, and affirming the other's humanity and pain. So that was brought back to us by someone who, one of our students who volunteered at Pacham, the local group homeless shelter, sort of traveling homeless shelter, if you will. And he got feedback from the homeless client himself that no one had ever really sat down and listened to him. And the student was the first person that had done so, and it had really been sort of transformational. And I think what was very interesting was that the student really didn't realize that that's what he was providing until we got back to the classrooms and sort of had some discussion on what that means and what it means to do that for people. The learning and service learning, conditions and challenges faced by the target population, learning about what agencies are out in the community, and this whole network of social services that we as physicians often are not aware of. And so getting that out there early on to first-year medical students, I think, was important. And then having them understand what are some of the helping strategies employed by the agency, so counseling, case management, financial assistance that's out there. I just wanted to show you a few shots of our students out in the community. They might be talking with at-risk children about visiting a doctor. They might be going and talking about nutrition at the children's dental clinic. They might be meeting with preschool parents in local preschools and discussing nutrition and behavior management. Tutoring, as I already mentioned, in after-school programs and with the Boys and Girls Club. Chatting with seniors at the local adult care center. And assisting in Horses as Healers therapy program, which is an interesting program for handicapped children. Assisting seniors with therapeutic exercises was another. And as I mentioned, learning about homelessness in Charlottesville by talking with guests in a homeless shelter program. And the student in the center, Steve Bishop, actually went on to develop a nonprofit organization, Charlottesville Health Access, which now provides navigation services for homeless clients in the community. And he really said he wouldn't have been exposed to that except through the course. And this is just to balance out. I won't go through each of the agencies, but you can see that there's a long list of local agencies that we don't necessarily have to go overseas to see this here in our own community. Some of the statistics, basically, if you add it all up, it's over 25,000 hours in the last 5 years of community service provided by our medical students. And some of the other portions of the course, we talked about reflection exercises and discussions, are a way for raising awareness of all the social issues that occur in medicine and for deepening students' own self-awareness. We use written reflections, which they are able to make connections between current and past experiences. We ask them to examine their personal prejudices, preferences, and misconceptions, which, as I mentioned before, sort of going to Southern Albemarle, sort of that came out in some of the self-reflection. explore the meaning of humanism and professionalism in medicine. We asked them to talk about role models that they had encountered in the community, and to give evidence of the transfer of learning from classroom into the community and vice versa. We also have these small group discussions as part of their first year training. There are these clinical professional development groups of 6 students, and we've incorporated social issues, medicine sort of themes into the cases that are discussed each and every week through the curriculum. And we try to help them make connections between talks and the community experiences. And they're able to hear not only what they've done, but hear in detail from 5 other students about what projects they're working on. And it helps them to challenge each other about their misconceptions and grapple with pressing societal issues that impact the practice of medicine. Obviously, with Obamacare, we've had some very heated discussions back and forth about what that means to folks in our community as well as to ourselves as physicians. So SIM, or Social Issues in Medicine, is really a different kind of learning experience from what they're getting for most of their medical school curriculum in the basic sciences, where they're focused a little bit more on facts and learning concrete ideas and then learning how to synthesize those. As opposed to that, we're now talking about an open-ended sort of exploratory course that focuses on learning about the community. We don't require them to memorize any data. There are no pat answers. There's not a multiple choice question that can sort of get to this A, B, C, or D type answer. And that can be a little bit overwhelming for some of the students who have come through college sort of performing well in that situation and gone through medical school, learning the memorization of facts, so forth. And we're trying to move our whole curriculum to an active curriculum where integration and synthesis is really at the fore. And then, as I mentioned, it's a course where they develop practice of self-reflection and personal growth for better self-understanding. So we think it's been a very successful course. We've had a lot of nice feedback from students, and we hope to continue it as we go on. Thank you very much.
Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Anselmo Canfora. I teach in the School of Architecture, the Department of Architecture.
And I'm Sarah Harper, a student fourth year in the School of Architecture.
So Sarah and I are going to present a couple of projects that we've been working on through Initiative Recover, a program that I founded in 2007. What I'd like to do first is sort of give you a sense of the overall framework for this program. It's a program that casts a fairly wide curricular net across the School of Architecture. As you can see in the far left, it has a series of curricular academic components. At the core of the program is the Studio Recover, which is currently taking place this spring term. We've been very fortunate over the last few years to also be funded through the JPC to have a research group conduct projects during the summer term, as well as having a J-term site visits, and I'll talk a little bit more about that in a second. I think Recover it relies on these 3 main aspects of curricular components, academic components, the collaborative efforts that take place with partnerships across grounds, as well as across the community locally and internationally. And of course, the kind of partnerships and sponsorships that have now begun to form even more clearly with companies and benefactors. Recover has 3 primary objectives. The first one is to really focus on a purpose to positively influence the design and building of safe, healthy, and sustainable communities around the world through partnerships with humanitarian aid organizations. So we rely first and foremost on the knowledge and the field-tested experience and know-how of our community partners. We don't presume to enter into a situation with a community without this partnership. The second important objective, really, which is at the core of the kind of instructional purpose for the program, is to focus my students' attention on real-world, real-time, innovative design applications in service of a comprehensive design studio education. And this is also the opportunity where architecture students, engineering students, students from the School of Commerce come together to work on these projects. And third, to advance translational research, applied research in the areas of building materials, methods, and technologies. This is where we've also begun to make a considerable amount of progress working with commercial entities in Virginia, especially in Southside, Southwest Virginia, where now manufacturing and production is becoming part of our, an extension of our R&D of the program. So as I mentioned, Sarah and I are gonna talk about two projects. I'm gonna focus primarily on the school project that we recently dedicated in Jita. It's a community in the Wakiso district of Uganda near Kampala. And then Sarah will talk about that middle slide, the middle image on top of the Breathe House that we recently have been commissioned to build in Haiti as part of a design competition. So the primary school project in Jita started the spring of 2007. This is a fairly modest building at about 6,500 square feet, but a very sort of involved process. I remember sitting down to dinner with the director of Building Tomorrow, the nonprofit organization out of Indianapolis, Indiana, at the very beginning. And George said to me, I appreciate your enthusiasm, I appreciate your commitment to this project, but please realize that this is really going to be a marathon. It's not going to be a project that's going to quickly be completed over the next 6 months. It's actually going to take quite some time. And at that moment, I was sort of taken aback by that statement and thought, okay, I should sort of really think about how this project is going to influence not only, obviously, the community which it will serve, but the education of my students in the School of Architecture. I will also mention that with our nonprofit partners, we also work with professional entities. So on this project, the Arab Cause program out of the Office of Arab Associates out of London provided us with all of the structural consultancy on the project, and Ewan Smith is the structural engineer who has been working on projects with us since 2007. So this gives you a sense of the people that have worked on the project, how it impacted the curricular of the classes across the years, and the involvement of folks from the School of Engineering and Applied Science, my colleague Dana Elsey, who was essentially co-teaching a parallel course called Engineering in Context, and the School of Architecture studio students of that spring term of 2008. This was a very interesting moment during our first visit to Jita. We were visiting other schools in the area, and this was a very wonderful moment when we were playing as part of recess with the school kids, and Dolores O'Connor, my student's hands, which you see on the left, began this dialogue, this conversation with the kids on the playground. And they were fascinated by the color of her skin. What was really interesting about this moment was this sort of newfound awareness that, in fact, her hand was not covered by a white powder. And they were trying to rub that white powder off to then reveal the darker pigment skin underneath it. This was an incredible moment because it's through this intimate interaction that we had continued dialogue about the project. We also involved the kids and talked to them a lot about what their expectations were for the project, what they saw, what sort of vision they had in the school. And my students sort of led these small drawing exercises, as you can see on the hood of cars in these remote sites. We also needed some help to navigate the roads. And we also used sort of very important common shared values through food, the idea of consuming fruit and understanding the way that it's harvested, the way that it's cut, and the way that it's shared amongst the community. Any opportunity that we had to then become more involved with the community at these critical moments during the project, the kind of groundbreaking ceremony, work sessions with the community, where my students and future students of this academy could share in the process of building and then beginning to understand how to improve, incrementally innovate local building technologies. In this case, we were very interested in integrating passive design as part of the building to naturally ventilate. We couldn't necessarily afford this building product, which is called a Pompeii brick. And so we developed a design to allow the building to sort of breathe, to naturally ventilate, using a rotated brick pattern on the west elevation. This required us to also work with the community, work with the local masons to introduce this innovation. And here you see the final, one of the final images of the school. And the final dedication.
So I'm going to talk a little bit about the most recent project that Recover has been working on, which is the Breathe House, and that is to be built in St. Mark Haiti by the end of this year. So it was a competition put on by the Archive Institute, which stands for Architecture for Health in Vulnerable Environments, and targeted at a community in St. Mark Haiti that is affected by both HIV/AIDS and tuberculosis. So as you can see, we had a extensive team of both faculty advisors and students, both undergraduate and graduate. And I'm going to talk a little bit about some of the design principles that went into this design. Basically, you can see here a plan which is showing a generous living area and 3-bedroom and 2-bathroom home for these families affected by these diseases in St. Mark. And our design principles of passive ventilation, as well as solar orientation and rainwater collection, all contribute to the sustainability of these homes and the ability to have these homes be realized and then be used effectively in this area. Also, principles of the building systems, which is a panelized wall system that can be easily assembled on site and also involves the community in the construction and the ease of assembly on site. The components would be manufactured in fabrication facilities, not on site, obviously, either in the United States or another larger fabrication facility in Haiti, but still the idea that these can be easily shipped and then assembled on site. And then also we had the opportunity, which was wonderful for the student team as architecture students and hopefully being able to build other buildings in our near future, the opportunity to see this design that we've made be built. We have the opportunity to use the Milton Airport hangar in Charlottesville as a space of experimentation to see if these buildings are actually going to stand up, and also get a sense of what these buildings might feel like, because that's another, we're always thinking about these passive strategies and sustainability and materials and the overall design, but also wanting to create a comfortable and helpful place for these users to live.
Thank you.
So I'm Janita Richardson, and this is my colleague, Jim Smith. And before I begin, I want to affirm the presence of other members of the team. If you just raise your hand if you're associated with the WILL group, we're well represented here. One of the themes that has already been running through the discourse today is the importance of meaningfully engaging communities and understanding the perspective of communities, as well as providing students with real-life experiences in a community context. And that is the way we really look at service learning in the WILL project, Water and Health in Limpopo. And we look at the complex issues associated with water quality and quantity and its impact on health in the Limpopo province. The seed that really began the impetus of this work really is summed up in this problem. There's a problem with water in Limpopo. There are over a billion people without access to quality water. There are 2 million children a year that are negatively impacted in their health, and it's directly related to water. Our approach from the onset has really been to establish respectful, mutually beneficial projects in partnership with the University of Venda, UNIVEN, as well as our Limpopo community partners. One of the pillars of the work have really been building sustainable partnerships, and the attributes of building a sustainable partnership are empowering community voice, building communications across the Atlantic, which can be challenging, managing expectations of both the community partners and university partners, a cultural sensitivity and humility, mutually beneficial relationships, and so it's not just us helicoptering in as researchers and telling people what we think they need, but actually listening to our partners. Sustainability. We are obviously passing through. These individuals live there every day, and so we want to engage in projects that are sustainable and valued by the people on site. We want to also be mindful of IRB considerations whenever we're involving taking part in our empirical research portion of the work, and that the work is mutually defined and collaborative, and that has to do with power sharing. So we will happily entertain questions about how we did that, but we have 12 minutes. And so what we'd like for you to remember at this point is that to do this work requires time, which was mentioned before, a sense of humility, flexibility, and at times, a sense of humor. But we can affirm that every minute that you spend on the front end in developing meaningful relationships and partnerships are worth it. What you see here is an interdisciplinary training, a model which really speaks to how many disciplines are involved in the complex issues around water and health. And we have representation both here at the University of Virginia across grounds, as well as at the different disciplines represented at the University of Venda, and also some on-site expertise from our community partners. But what is common across all of the disciplinary contributions is this notion that we want to build some sustainable water technologies to improve human health and the quality of life for the individuals in the affected communities. This just shows you a brief map of the fact that water is a problem. It's not just a problem of scarcity, but it's also a problem of quality. The challenge then, in terms of identifying what we would do first, second, and third, is to, in partnership with UNIVEN and our key informants, develop strategies that address these issues. There have been multiple pathways for students to be involved in the work, some through JPC Scholars, some through the Center for Global Health, and other venues. What you see here is an increase in the student participation from the University of Virginia side. What's worth noting is that all of our University of Virginia students partner with University of Venda students side by side when they're doing the work in the field. So there actually are more students involved in the project than this. And we don't believe that there's a one-size-fits-all approach to doing international work. It would be too easy to lay that out for you. What we have come to understand is the value of time that you spend in the development of relationships, of establishing clear communication pathways, of managing expectations, and what we understand is that though the benefits of spending that time on the front end accrue to you in innumerable ways when you begin to actually do the work. At this point, I'd like to turn it over to my colleague who will be able to talk to you more about the specific empirical research.
Thanks, Janita. I'd like to spend a few moments just talking about some of the research activities that have been going on between the University of Virginia and UNIVEN. It is certainly quite diverse and I think very exciting. This is a table that shows the faculty participation in our WILL program, both from UVA and UNIVEN. And as you can see, we span quite a few schools and at the University of Virginia and the College of Arts and Sciences with our participants. And UNIVEN offers complementary experience in areas like microbiology, hydrology, nursing, and law. We've also been very successful in attracting support funds for the research we've been conducting. Here is actually an incomplete list of the research support we've received to date. NIH, National Science Foundation, the Foundation of the National Institute of Health, a couple of UVA programs, including the UVA Jefferson Public Citizens Program and Goa Risby's Deepening Global Education Program, the Fogarty International Center, and the Pfizer Global Health Initiative. So we've been very fortunate and very successful, I think, in our group of faculty about bringing funds to support our activities there. Here is, again, not necessarily a complete list, but probably the most major research emphases and projects we've been working on in the last couple of years. And actually, all these activities are currently active. It's not like some of them have been completed. These are all ones that are currently ongoing. The first is PhotoVoice, which I'll speak a little bit about each of these. We're also working to develop an agent-based model for early childhood diarrhea in Japasha and Shavumo, two villages in Limpopo province. We're investigating point of use or household level water treatment interventions. We're also looking at the interaction between malnutrition and enteric disease in children, the so-called MAL-ED project. We're looking at civil engineering water treatment techniques that are more centralized, but yet appropriate for a developing world community, such as slow sand filtration. And of course, wrapped around all this is a very critical element is water and health education and training. So PhotoVoice, I list this first because really this was one of the very first activities we embarked on. PhotoVoice is an interesting concept, and basically it empowers community members to have a voice in issues important to them. And basically we do this by providing cameras to members of the community. The community members are then trained about the use of the cameras as a tool to both share community knowledge and their own personal knowledge. They then are set forth to take pictures of things that are important to them. In some cases, we may have a theme, like, for example, water or health. And basically, at the end of the project, the photos are reviewed collaboratively with members of the community and the project team to identify the key water sanitation and health issues. And again, here are a couple of the photos that were taken by members of the community. And this activity was really, for us, very successful in introducing us to the community and beginning to understand what their concerns were. Our agent-based model, more than anything else, might depict how interdisciplinary our project is, and it's probably the one element that involves everybody in the project. As you can see, basically, an agent-based model, an example of an agent-based model is the Chesapeake Bay model, the game that's being touted by the University of Virginia. It was developed in part by Jerry Learmonth on our team, and it basically lets us describe very complex systems through this agent-based model. And we're applying ours to look at the health of early children development and early childhood diarrhea. And as you can see, all these different elements inform our mathematical model, things like law, water and sanitation, mapping, the MAL-ED program, traditions and education, census data, economics. And as you can see, this shows all the participants that have feeded information into this model. Names in red are our WILL partners at the University of Venda. We recently had a WILL ABM workshop. This was in December at the University of Venda, and these are just a few photographs of activities that were conducted during the workshop. We're also studying point-of-use water treatment. Typically, in the developing world, we have a centralized water treatment and distribution system. In the developing world, there often aren't resources to do that. So the World Health Organization has increasingly been interested in this idea of decentralizing water treatment so that people can treat their water in their home right before they consume it. And hence, that's the rationale for this project. We're investigating the use of ceramic water filters that can be made with local materials, clay, sawdust, and water, and by local labor to become a sustainable business and also improve water quality and health. And we actually just completed the data collection for a study on an HIV-positive cohort, and what we found is that the ceramic filters significantly improved their health. We're currently working with a couple of JPC teams. Last year, we investigated the feasibility of creating a sustainable factory in Limpopo. That was quite successful, and we're moving ahead this year with a second JPC team and a DGE grant to actually create the ceramic filter factory. Malad, well, so we know that when you become malnourished when you don't eat enough food, okay? But Malad is investigating the hypothesis that when you have gastrointestinal infections, even if you're given plenty of food, you still can become malnourished. So actually, this project is one of 8 sites around the world, and we're actually tracking in Shapasha and Shagumo 200 children from birth to age 2 with a whole wealth of medical tests and monitoring. In fact, each child gets 2 home visits each week over the course of a 2-year study. We're also looking at what would be considered old-fashioned techniques in the United States, things like slow sand filtration, which is a technology that's been around probably for over 100 years. But in the developing world, this represents a relatively appropriate strategy to treat water. Basically, we just have a large sand filter, water passes through it, and then is distributed out to the villages. We've actually created 2 slow sand filters with teams of undergraduate students in Shapasha and Shabuma. And of course, our water and health education. Last summer, we had a water and health curriculum implemented for school-age children. We had 3 first-year undergraduate students that led this effort from the University of Virginia in partnership with their Univent colleagues. And that's actually, they're shown there with a team of students in Shapasha and Shabuma that they educated on health and water hygiene. In 2011, this coming summer, we're going to be implementing more comprehensive curricula for adults. These are some of the priorities of a sustainable partnership, and actually Janita already has spoken to some of these issues, as well as strengthening communications, which we realize is critical to our success. So in conclusion, I think WIL has been a very successful pan-university collaboration. We've been very happy with the progress we made. It's been a lot of hard work, but we feel very excited. We've had so much great student involvement. We've had everything from first-year undergraduates all the way up to postdoctoral researchers that are participating in this activity. And our faculty are so diverse, spread throughout the university. We've really been focusing on all these elements, research, education, and training. And basically, it's a work in progress. We certainly don't feel like we're done yet. We have a lot to go, but we're very excited about the future.
Thank you.